You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also uplifting their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen, and together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today is going to be the greatest show ever. We are talking about all things dogs, my favorite. And we have a great lineup. We have Occupaws, Dane County Humane Society, Pets for the Elderly, and lastly, Touch USA. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Our first guest is Susan Kurowski, the Executive Director of Pets for the Elderly. Pets for the Elderly is a 501c3 public charities whose mission is to provide companionship to senior individuals through pet ownership while saving the lives of companion animals in shelters. The Pets for the Elderly Foundation helps pay for the fees to participating animal shelters throughout the United States for senior citizens ages 60 and over who adopt a companion dog or cat from a participating shelter. This includes the pre-adoption, veterinary exam, spay, neuter, if part of the adoption fee. The program began in 1992 with two shelters near Cleveland, Ohio, and since then has grown to a nationwide program which has helped successfully place over 100,000 companion animals with senior adopters. Susan, can you tell us a little bit of the story behind Pets for the Elderly and how you got involved in the organization?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me here. Our organization began when our founder sold a very successful business in about 1992. And he was a single 70-something-year-old. And he had two passions, two concerns about our society at that time. He seemed to have this pre-knowledge before things came public more recently about the benefit of pets on and having them on the benefits of the health for older adults. And he was also very concerned about the number of animals that languished in shelters without permanent homes. And he wanted to provide this incentive to get animals out of shelters. So we call ourselves kind of a twofer organization in that we do both. Our funding helps shelter animals, dogs and cats, and it helps people age 60 and over have companionship. I joined the organization in 2006. My husband took a job transfer, and after working 20-some years in the stock market, I went to this side of finances, requesting donations and grants, and the rest is history. I've been here almost 17 years and do fundraising and coordination for the organization.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I bet you it was a lovely switch for you, right?
Yes.
My next venture is going to involve dogs. I don't know how, but I'm going to make it happen. And that is so great when you say a twofer. That's so correct. Especially I had saw recently where, you know, the good things from the pandemic, if there was a good thing from the pandemic, is that the shelters really emptied out. But unfortunately, now with people going back to work, they are becoming extremely overpopulated. So anything to help get those poor cats and dogs out of the shelter, I am all for. So do you work directly with potential pet owners, or does your organization primarily focus on raising funds to support the partnering shelters?
We do not do any direct placements, any coordination of people with the animals that they wish to adopt. Because his goal was to get animals out of shelters, we have an application form and we clear shelters to work with us, those that we think that will be appropriate and have perhaps a greater senior community. And we give them the funding to then provide the discounts to older adults. I'm sorry, I just lost my thought. I got so far ahead of myself because we've made some changes in the program recently.
I do that listen.
And I do want to go back to something that you said earlier about one of the good things with the pandemic is that because of the awareness that the pandemic brought to others about feeling isolated and lonely, I think that it gave a greater credence to our work and how often older people feel that problem.
Yes, exactly. And you are not in every state, but almost every state. Is that right?
That's right. We would love to be in every state. That's our goal, is to have at least one shelter in our program in every state. Now, clearly, one in Texas and one in Rhode Island wouldn't be quite the same thing. So we'll have more than one in some. But truly, we would love to have at least one shelter in every state.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And, you know, since our show was created to support family caregivers, can you tell listeners that may be interested in helping a loved one get a companion animal, why that would be a worthwhile endeavor, or in other words, what are some of the benefits?
The recent research shows that pets are more than just calming in lowering blood pressure, which I think is one of the first medical advantages that we saw. The companionship, the exercise, the holding to a routine, all of those things are beneficial to the person that needs them. I think, though I can't speak clearly, you know, as professionally as you can to the companion or the caretaker side of it, I think that looking at my own situation, I have a husband who is 10 years older than I am. Having, you don't have to live alone to be lonely. And having something like a companion animal in the household gives you something to share together, something to laugh about and talk about. We have found that so many people write to us and talk about what a difference it has made to them or to their loved ones to have this animal in their lives.
I can definitely,
Susan, I just love hearing that. That's just so cool to hear that that's really had an impact also on you personally.
Yes.
And can you tell us, yes. I saw some testimonials on there. Could you tell us about one of your favorite success stories?
Oh, do I have to hold it to one?
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
No, you can share your favorite.
We are so fortunate, and I do tend to tell a few over and over. I will tell you my own personal story. My husband had a heart transplant, not a heart transplant, a valve replacement, but a heart surgery about 6 years ago, and we had just gotten a puppy, my first puppy in years. And when he came out of the surgery, he was glad enough to see me. But his first question was, how's the puppy? And I tell everyone that I think he came home from the hospital sooner because he wanted to get home and see that puppy.
Oh, I bet.
But, sure.
But my favorite adopter stories truly are, I got a card in the mail, a holiday card from a woman who said, I'm 72 years old, and thanks to your program, I adopted Sadie, and she has taught me to laugh and play again. Mm. And these things just bring me to my knees, these kinds of notes. Or the older man who walked out, very sad widower, who walked out into the waiting room after adopting with a little fluffy white dog, and everybody, you know, made a fuss. And he just brightened and said, I'm going to be a chick magnet. and we did hear later. Some, yeah.
Those are some definite success stories.
That he was out walking in his senior community more and connecting with people more. And that connectivity is so important.
Yes, definitely. And we'll talk about some more of those benefits later in the show. But I didn't really think about that. You know, for seniors, even if they need to make vet appointments or grooming appointments, you know, it really gets them out and interacting with others. So what a wonderful organization. And before we let you go, is there anything else that you want to share, or can you tell listeners where they can go to learn more information and make a donation?
Our website is petsfortheelderly.org. It's a lot to spell out. Just make sure you get all those letters in there. And truly, we are, you helped me earlier, we are always looking for donations, of course. We do have some funding from our founders' trust, but we're always looking for funding and helping us grow the program and helping us add other aspects to it beyond just adoption, maybe helping with veterinary care and that kind of thing. Listeners, if you know any other shelters across the U.S. that should be part of this, encourage them to get in touch with us and put in an application. We'd love to have more shelters in the program too.
Oh, that would be wonderful. What does that entail? Is it simply filling out an application, or is there a process that's involved?
It's filling out an application and submitting a few legal documents, proof that they have a tax ID number, and maybe some, because it's been more and more difficult in recent years to make personal visits to shelters, we ask for photos to be submitted. It's about a 2-page application. It's not very difficult, and, you know, probably a phone interview, and
they can be on board. That's great. There's a lot of great animal rescue organizations in the area, and I can definitely keep that in mind as I'm out and about visiting and trying to support them in all the different ways that I can. It has been a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for the great work that you do, and I will let you go. Enjoy your dinner with friends.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we're talking about all things dog. Sorry, we're dealing with a little bit of my technical difficulties coming in through the system and being a bit delayed, but I have so many questions for our guests too, because I'm so excited about being able to talk about dogs and animals and how they help folks. For our second segment, we have Lisa Bernard, and we want to make sure that you understand why we're talking about dogs on a show for caregivers. As we have shared many times in the past, Liza and I, that being a caregiver can increase stress and isolation, and it can be linked to negative health consequences.
In an Australian study of 199 patients who were dealing with mental health conditions such as depression, anxiety, and post-traumatic stress disorder, found that 94% reported a reduction of anxiety through tactile stimulation thanks to psychiatric assistance dogs. Additionally, 51% of the patients reported that their dog was responsible for interrupting undesirable behavior.
That is some seriously intense statistics, right? Yeah. 94% of a reduction. The payoff extends even beyond mental health, and it includes enhanced brain health, weight control, because I've seen that. I've been forced to get out there and get Minnie moving, and it means I have to get moving, right? Improved cardiorespiratory fitness and muscular strength, and reduced risk of chronic diseases and killers such as heart disease, stroke, cancer, and diabetes. So there is just a whole lot of benefits to having these dogs in our lives.
Yes, there is. And you had mentioned before, we've got Lisa Bernard on the line with us from the Dane County Humane Society, who is a partner with the Pets for the Elderly. Lisa, can you tell listeners what they should do if they're interested in adopting a pet from your shelter utilizing the Pets for the Elderly program?
Sure. So at Dane County Humane Society, we believe anyone who wants to love and care for a pet should be able to do so. which is why we partnered with Pets for the Elderly to help more seniors in our community have that opportunity. So through the program, adopters aged 60 years and older can get up to $50 off their adoption fee. So let's say they're interested in a cat that just happens to be $30 for their adoption fee. That means that their adoption fee is covered.
Nice.
And they don't have to pay anything. So they just need to stop in and let us know during the adoption process that they are a senior, and we will be able to give them that discount.
That's wonderful. I'm wondering, what does the Dane County Humane Society do to ensure the chosen pet meets the needs of the potential adopter?
That's a great question. So we have shelter resource counselors that meet with each potential adopter, and we discuss what they're looking for in a pet and what type of lifestyle they have, so we can help match the type of pet they're looking for. We'll also ask them which animals they're interested in meeting, and based on what they've told us about what they're looking for in their lifestyle, we can tell them that based on this animal's background, they may not quite fit what they're looking for, or they do fit, and we'll continue discussing it. So we gather lots of information about the animals, as much as we can. If they were surrendered to us, we ask for as much information from their previous family about what their life was like in the home. If they come from another shelter, we'll ask what was their behavior there. If they're in our foster program, our foster parents will take notes and submit the notes to us, as well as photos and videos of how the animal behaved in their home. And then our staff and volunteers will also log information about their experience with the animal, and we give all that information to the potential adopter, as well as all the medical information we have, because it's a big decision.
Yes.
And we know that, and we want them to be able to have all the information we have so they can make a sound decision as to whether they think this pet is right for them. And then after they've decided yes or no, then we bring the animal into the room to meet them.
That's a good idea. That is an excellent idea.
Just because they can be distracting.
Well, yeah.
Animals can be distracting.
And you can fall in love with an animal that's not a good fit. And, you know, that's hard to say not this one once you see it. And so
we'll also take that opportunity.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. We'll also take that opportunity when we bring the animal in. So let's say the dog tends to be more jumpy. We'll show the potential adopters some positive reinforcement training tricks of how they can stop that behavior, and then they can continue with that in their home.
And I think that kind of goes along with what I was going to say is, what support and resources does the Dane County Humane Society have to offer after the pet adoption?
Yes. So whenever anyone adopts from us, they get a folder containing lots of information. Some of it is about transitioning your pet, introducing your pet to other animals, introducing the pet to other family members or children. And then at the end of the adoption process, we also encourage our adopters that should any questions arise or any concerns, to reach out to us as soon as possible, because we're here to help. We know that some animals struggle more with the transition process into a new home, so we can offer them tips to help with that if they're seeing unwanted behaviors. We can also, let's say an adopter suddenly finds that their hours has been cut and they can't make as much money anymore. We have a database of resources, so we can point them to, let's say, some lower cost vet care services if they need it. We also offer dog training classes, and when you get your packet of information, in there is going to be a discount code on the training class for your pup. And then Mounds Pet Food Warehouse is a wonderful supporter of us, and they have given us a list of different items for the pets that pet parents can just show up for one-time purchase and get discounts on certain items for their adoption. For their adopted animal.
I am just blown away by all of these resources and things that you're saying that you guys do before and after the adoption. This is just such a great piece to hear about. And we're going to have to take a short commercial break here. And so we really want to thank you for your time. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you.
Lisa. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and today we are talking about all things dogs, and I couldn't be happier. We're speaking currently with Lisa Bernard from the Dane County Humane Society, and before we went to break, you were sharing some of the resources that were out there to support those that may financially be struggling with the expenses of pet ownership. Did we miss anything?
I was just going to mention that Dane County Humane Society also has a thrift store at 6904 Watts Road in Madison, and it sells gently used pet supplies as well as clothing, furniture, and more at affordable prices, and the proceeds go to help the animals in need in our community.
That is a win-win. And I can say that I volunteered for the Humane Society as a dog walker, which was always my favorite part of the week. For those folks that owning an animal may not be feasible, what are some volunteer opportunities that you have so people can still get some of those benefits of pet ownership without actually owning a pet?
Yes, so we do have a variety of volunteer opportunities. Canine companions, work with the dogs, feline friends, get to cuddle with cats, critter colors, obviously, are the small critters, but we also look for volunteers to help out in our front office doing administrative duties, working with our lost and found, helping reunite lost pets with their loving families, and then volunteers to also work in our adoption center, helping make the matches and taking care of animals that need to get picked up by their new families. And then we also have, so our volunteer program requires a 2 hour per week commitment. Mm-hmm. So for those who can't come to the shelter for 2 hours per week, they can become foster families. And then the animals can stay in their home and they can take care of them there until they're ready to come back to the shelter to be adopted.
Well, there is a lot of opportunities there. Do you have any upcoming events or anything else that you'd like to let listeners know about what they can and how they can learn more about everything that you do there at the Dane County Humane Society?
Yeah, so we have our big fundraiser coming up on October 15th. It's called Bark and Wine. And this year we're going wild because we're celebrating our 20th anniversary of our wildlife center.
Yay!
So Spark and Wine Wildlife Edition. And tickets, we will stop selling tickets on Monday, so you still have some time. Just go to giveshelter.org. And then we also have a variety of independent fundraisers that are being planned and held by various businesses and individuals throughout the community to help raise funds for the shelter.
Well, that's fantastic.
And all of the information is at giveshelter.org.
Giveshelter.org. And the Bark and Wine is wine, like a bottle of wine?
So we do get to enjoy wine and other beverages, as well as play with kittens, cuddle some puppies. You get to meet our classroom animals, enjoy some hors d'oeuvres. There's a silent auction. And there's also a wine pull. Wine too.
And if you have chocolate there, then you have completely checked off everything I need to survive. So I'm in.
Is that event?
And it's at the shelter, so very, very convenient.
That's what I was going to ask, if it's at the shelter. That's wonderful. And so before we transition to our next guest, I was just wondering, I kind of want to bring this back to the whole idea that having these animals and having these opportunities, whether it's fostering or volunteering or participating in the fundraisers, really can make a difference for families that have people that have some extra needs, and then the caregivers, right? And we're here to talk about how can we empower caregivers, how can we help caregivers. And so I was just curious if you had any success stories that you'd like to share about a time where you've seen some of the adoption process really work out for people.
So we do encourage our adopters to share updates with us, and we love hearing updates and sharing them on our social media. And one of the updates, we'll go back to Pets for the Elderly. A gentleman adopted late last year a dog, and after a few months, he sent us an update saying he never knew he could love something so much.
Aww. That's beautiful.
We're very happy it worked out for them.
Definitely. Lisa, it's really been a pleasure talking with you and hearing about all the great things that the Dane County Humane Society is doing. Please, good luck with all of the fundraising, and please have a good night. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Good night.
See you.
Night.
So there's many studies out there that show that pet ownership can have a positive impact on one's mental and physical health. U.S. News and World Report wrote an article on the top 10 reasons for specifically seniors why they should own a pet, and they include companionship, creating routine, exercise, stress reduction, getting out, whether, again, it's going to the dog park or the vet or the groomer. Pets create great social opportunities, meeting new people. I mean, everybody knows that dogs make great icebreakers, right? Trying new activities. And then lastly, for protection.
Yes, dogs can serve many purposes, and they're becoming more popular in supporting veterans, the physically disabled, and those with autism, to name a few. Next, we're going to be speaking here with Cheryl Hartung from Occupaws. Occupaws is a guide dog association, which is a nonprofit charitable organization based out of Madison, Wisconsin, that is an International Guide Dog Federation accredited school. Their mission is to place fully trained guide dogs with visually impaired residents of Wisconsin and surrounding cities within 150 miles of Wisconsin borders at no charge through an in-home training program. That is just seriously impressive. Yeah. Cheryl, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about how a dog becomes an Occupaws dog and the training they go through, please?
I'd love to. And you did a great job of describing what Occupaws is. I'll have to use that. I'm going to steal that from you sometime soon.
Feel free.
Where we get our dogs and how they become guide dogs. Yes. I'll do it chronologically. We get our dogs from two sources. We have some breeders that are mostly in the Wisconsin and Minnesota area that we've been working with for 10, 15 years, and they will donate a dog to us. They know the type of traits that we're looking for, and those would be things like, you know, they need to be not a super hyperactive dog. I hesitate to use calm because they can't be lazy. They still have to be very curious. And they need to be smart, super smart, because they eventually get to the level of what we call intelligent disobedience, which is they're given a command and they know they can't carry out that command. You're going to walk across, the blind person gives the command to go across the street. The dog sees that there's traffic coming. The dog knows that it needs to disobey that order. So that's the high level type thinking we're talking about. So the other source that we get the puppies from, though, is our own in-house breeding program. And that started 2, maybe 3 years ago now, where we saw some of those dogs. We thought, oh, this could make a really good guide dog, a lot of good traits. But I think we'll use this one to breed some other potential guide dogs. So we've had, off the top of my head, I can think of about 4 different female dogs, a couple of black labs, a yellow lab just had a litter. We've had a chocolate lab that had a couple litters. And we only have them do 2 litters and then they're done. We're not about being a puppy mill at all. We're doing what's best for the dogs all the way through. And then a couple of dads, you don't need quite as many of the dads as you need the moms. Those are the 2 places where we get our puppies. And then the beginning, I would say there are 3 stages. The first stage is the puppy stage, but it's a very important stage, socialization. because you can't get that back. Those first 12 weeks really set the course for what kind of sure. dog that's going to be. And you need to get them out and about. And that's really where a lot of our volunteers do their work. That's me personally. I like the babies, as I like to say. You know, even amongst dog lovers, there are two types of dog lovers. There are the people like me who say, puppies all the time. You know, I can get a new puppy every couple of months. Okay. And then there are dog owners that say puppies.
I'd be in that category, Cheryl, where it's like, sure, it's a really cute puppy for you to take care of.
Right. You know, not that so in cute. My house. Yeah, not so cute at 2 o'clock in the morning when you got to take them out to go potty, right?
Exactly.
So that's the first phase, the puppy phase. And then they're evaluated about every 3 to 4 months just to see how they're coming along. Because truthfully, only 1 in 3, 1 in 4 of these dogs is actually going to make it to be a guide dog.
Oh, wow.
Which is not to say that there's anything wrong with the dog. There are a lot of good dogs. They're just not all guide dogs. Mm-hmm. And so if they make it in the program long enough, most of them will end up going into our Paws Forward program, which is a program that we run with one of the prisons in Wisconsin. They go to the prison, or prisoner gets this dog and is solely responsible for it. So total win-win there. The prisoner gets this responsibility, gets, you know, privileges, because this is a big deal. The dogs live with them in the cell. They're with them 24/7.
Wow.
And, you know, it's like going to boot camp for the dogs too. They, you know, if they're a little lacking on, you know, a little sharp, you know, response to the commands, when they come out of prison, they are good to go. Now, they have to be a little bit re-socialized again, because that's not a typical social environment inside a prison. And if they make it through that, so you can see get all this procedure going. If they make it through that, then they go to actual guide dog college. And these are the professional people. These are the people who have been, you know, master's degree trained to train these dogs. And these are what I call like the supersonic skills. These are the, you know, find the elevator, you know, and the dog will go off and do that. So that's last step. And then they get paired with people, paired with their clients and their forever person.
Wow.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
It takes about 2 years. By the time they're ready to be a guide dog, they're 2 years old.
Sure. That's a very rigorous process, but obviously very needed. And so I'm just really impressed with how you guys are putting the dogs through a really, you know, thorough experience to make sure that their human and their forever person is going to be safe. But it's also amazing how you're incorporating people in prison and other opportunities to just be building connections and doing intersections of how we can help all different groups of people. I'm really amazed. I'm almost awestruck here.
We have a saying that raise a puppy, change a life, and there are a lot of lives that get changed along the way.
Yeah. And the question that just keeps coming up in the back of my mind is, what happens to the puppies that don't make the cut? Are they just adopted out, or can they provide other services?
Lots of things happen to those dogs. And I would say, you know, not to make it sound mean, I would say last resort is they become a pet. Guide dogs really are the upper echelon of all service dogs.
Sure.
They can go on to help kids with autism. They can go on to be a canine police department member. They can go on to do search and rescue. They can go on to do a lot of things. Occasionally, they get the euphemism we use is they are career changed.
Oh.
And some of them get to be someone's very well-trained, well-loved pet.
Oh, that's wonderful. And do you work with those other organizations then to make those connections?
I personally do not, but the executive board within Occupaws does establish those relationships.
Sure. Sorry, I kind of went off track there. I was just about that.
I am all about the babies.
Yes.
But it's also fascinating because I've never really thought about how all these other roles for dogs are out there, and that they might be a little bit less demanding than a dog for someone who's visually impaired, but obviously they still need to be very well trained and well responsive dogs. And so it's kind of interesting to hear about the problem solving that Occupaws has done. It's just fascinating for me.
Yeah.
And that's what the dogs need to do also. They need to be problem solvers. They yeah. need to. An example, we got a letter from a client recently saying, "You know, want to let you know that one of your dogs saved my life, that some crazy driver was going through the neighborhood. And the dog not only knew, okay, should not cross the street, but knew like this was beyond the normal. This dog okay. backed her up, like basically pushed her back into her house.
Wow.
Because this
wow.
insane person was like driving over curbs and
You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm Liza, and I'm here with my co-host, Kristen, and we are speaking with Cheryl from Occupaws, and you were just finishing up a great story about a dog that actually saved a life, and that is amazing. That's got to feel good to know that you know, you guys in your organization had a part of that. Can going back a little bit to the dog part of the dog training part about that, what is the process of obtaining an Occupaws dog, and then what training goes on after the person receives the dog?
Awesome. I'd like actually to start with the end of that question
sure.
of what training is involved, because that's one of the things that makes Occupaws special, is that we bring the dog and the trainer to the client. Most other guide dog organizations will require the client to go to their training facility. Usually out of state, involves a lot of, you know, travel, expense, time, all those. But more importantly, you then have to transfer those skills to your home, your personal situation, whereas Occupaws goes to you and lays out that, you know, where are you going to be grocery shopping? How are you getting to work? What do you, you know, where is like the spot that the dog should be going to the bathroom at your house? Because that's, I won't even go into all the details of that, but because the person is blind, you obviously can't take the dog out looking for a place to go potty.
Sure, right?
There has to be a spot. And so that's all established. It takes about 2 weeks to really get it so that I take the babies. I don't know how to drive one of those harnesses with a fully trained guide dog.
Oh, sure.
So the clients need to learn how that all works. Like sometimes they're getting a new dog. Maybe they've had one that's retired and they're getting a new one. So they've got a leg up there. But that's a big, big difference that they come to you. As far as being that person, the application is online through occupaws.org. And there is some paperwork and there's some interview process. And I think the important thing to mention there is you try to figure out whether you, quite frankly, whether you need a dog, because we're not in the business of supplying pets. Mm. We are doing service dogs. And as I alluded to before, it's not a dog that's there for medical emergencies or a dog that's there for emotional support. It is specifically sure. a guide dog, and you need to know that it's going to work both ways and that it's going to be a good fit for the dog too. And just the type of dog. I mean, some people are pretty sedentary and they just need to get to and from point A to point B. We've had other clients who are college students who run races and, you know, the type of dog that you're going to have for that first person and then the run is very different.
Yeah,
and we need to know that so that we can make the best possible match out there.
Yeah. Again, you guys are so thorough. I would like to bring it back to the fact that, you know, we're a show for family caregivers, and we can all probably assume just from being in our society and observing people that are visually impaired working with guide dogs. And so we can see that there's benefits of that guide dog helping that person and helping them be able to be more out in the community, right? But from your experience, how does the dog also make life easier or help the caregivers that are supporting that person who's visually impaired?
Boy, I think we're all about how having the dog creates independence, but also allows the client to be more involved in the community. Mm-hmm. And so we're really thinking about the caregivers, the coworkers, the person that you're going to be sitting on the bus with, in providing assistance to the client. And you know, so many things are running through my mind. One of them, I have a personal thing for the, I think that this is one of the reason that we're starting to have more poodles, from the hypoallergenic portion, because it's one thing for you to be fine with dogs and not be allergic, but like, what if your coworker is, what if your partner is, we have a dog that's in Chicago that had that exact situation, that the partner was very allergic to dogs. And so we needed specifically to get a poodle to this person. We also really have the goal that the client can be completely independent, which I think would be, not that they don't have people that are helping and giving care, but they can be more independent. An example I would use from that for me as a baby puppy raiser, when they're very tiny, you have to be able to touch them while they're going to the bathroom, because a blind person will touch them while they're going to the bathroom. And if it's a straight back, you know, the dog is peeing. If it's an arched back, well, you know, you need to get out a poop bag and follow the, so, you know, to try to make these clients as independent as possible, I think is also huge for the caregivers.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, that has to be such a sense of relief. I mean, I even think at night when my teenage son is out going for a walk and he has the dog, I'm like, oh, he has the dog. You know, I just have a little more sense of security. Things are okay. Someone's, you know, well, not someone, but the dog is there to look after him or help him out. So do you have any upcoming events that list, or can you tell the listeners, or excuse me, let me start this all over. See, I knew this was going to be the problem about talking about dogs. So I was going to be so excited and my head's going to be all over the place. I can't focus. Okay. This is what I wanted to ask you. Can you tell the listeners about any upcoming events, and then also where they can go to learn more about your organization?
Oh, great. Actually, a really favorite event is coming up. It's our 6th annual Puptober Fest. It's going to be October 16th out at Wisconsin Brewing in Verona, and it will be all those things that you would expect for Oktoberfest, but it's a Puptoberfest. Yay. Drinks, food, bands, dogs. We'll have, you know, nail trimming available and microchipping available. And the other thing is, because it's Wisconsin Brewing, other dogs are welcome as well. Your leashed social dogs are encouraged to attend, because we too love all things dog. Beyond that, I would say, you know, occupaws.org is a really good place to go. Also, sometimes I get my information from Facebook, and you can look for Occupaws Guide Dog Association. We've got some really good media folks who are good about keeping things like events and other activities in the forefront. So if you ever want to know anything, occupaws.org, or head on over to one of the social medias.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation. And Liza, I hope your need for all things dogs has been met. It's been really, really interesting. And so for our listeners, please remember to listen to us live on Thursday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. And of course, you can always find our replays on the Civic Media app, which can be downloaded at any app store or on our website, empoweredcaregivercommunity.com. Thanks, everybody. Have a wonderful week and a dog-filled day.
I love it. Thank you.